This poem is entitled The Sectioning, and words for that particular week were tempest, honest, ostrich, happenstance, and ossify. The sectioning. The ward was blue with honest fear of sectioning. She numbed within her bed, curtains drawn, their vertical stripes sutured by the false noon light. Trial by ordeal, the head, ridiculous as an ostrich egg, wouldn't budge. I balked, though the baby was out and husband gone, loath to see her mortified. I had loved her once, but happenstance will viscerate even the most congenital of friendships. She was woken by the annunciation of lunch by a bustling woman, lips agash with grinning at babies. I parted the curtain as the scalpel cutting a quiet motion in rescuing a child from drowning. She was a forget-me-not, redolent of childhood misgiving, easily stamped upon or lost. She had a left-behind look. Her stitches hurt. I wondered where he was and recalled an ectopic boy who wouldn't be born, but stayed on in his mother, ossifying, so that she carried him 46 years till he was taken from her belly in a ball. Men sectioned him then to see his calcified brain, membrane, lungs, mute pods delicate as a stripped pomegranate. Absurd that blood flowed through this little fossil, but some will not comply with nature's tempestuous course, staying still until they translate into bone. So she lay an anchoress, an immaculate heart in stone. Thanks.
Our Anthony Scott is here. I'm Ben. Okay, the words for the week. The words for my week were tortoise, push, lemon, radio, and vision. It's called the stereogram. Born from wood, wire, and bakelite, and warm toasting stuff trapped in the speaker grills. Mario Lanza and the great Caruso on 78 were angry planets whirling around a black hole. And when Graham was asleep, a Bowie 45, that nimble asteroid, tracking the spaces between. Slower yet, your mum's 33 and a thirds, Jim Reeves, the Seekers, the Carpenters, tortoise Jupiters crooning their orbits. The pop of that bit where it always jumped, led astray by a grooved line of fluff, persuading the needle to leap. Not a stylus, but a blunt, flat needle, stitching the music from record player to radio, a tuner with the precision of your dad with a shovel, clubbing the stations into audio focus, the hiss and the hush, chasing each other, averaging out station to station. You took the back off once and marvelled at the emptiness. It was all hot air. Speakers at either end, the radio a veneer, and vast interstellar spaces between. Your mother cleaned the empty chamber so that heated, the air emerged, pressed through more fluff, the stuff she couldn't reach, yielding lemon freshness while it sang, waiting for the gift of sound and vision. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I got to know that poem well in the judging process, and it's one that I always enjoyed reading. Great to hear it tonight. Is Tess Adams here?
Yes.
Is it really you?
This one is called Black Mountain Rebel, and the words given were elk, palpable, fungus, replete, and cord.
Can I hear you?
Aren't you?
It's like seeing the Sistine Chapel being torched by thugs. That's what it is. So say dissenters of the word weavers Wemmel. See, they don't approve of rap. They prefer their rigid stanzas. Well, I say, on behalf of the word weavers Rind, it's time for change. Bring it on, past the woe, the boring, the cemeteries of performance, to the tremble of voiceless bells. You know, before ever a word was penned, poetry was an oral art. So yes, please, O'Bale, bring on the Dillons, the Coens, the Snyders. Oh, and the Elkin Brooks too. Our universe is a palpable rippity-rip-rap of things. Or the atrophy when it veers too far from music. Elliot knew a thing or two about rules. Rout them, go ahead. Take liberties with words, commit acts of violence. Fire the cannons, in with the cantos, out with the metronome. See, here's the thing. Real poetry doesn't say anything. It just ticks off the possibilities, a bit like a Gruyere cheese, a sort of smooth surface with gaps. So seize your quill, replete with glass bottle of ink. Take your windle, weave a welter, a wayment, even a watering cord, but please, may I implore, is a word weaving Webster, swap your torch for a bond of invisible wire that cuts at the wrist of your mind. Become one against the formal, the mundane, the wearying with undue thinking. We're sated with star stuff. Let's sprinkle some dust.
Thank you so much, Tess. And another one of the shortlisted poets, John W. Sexton, please.
I love being in this anthology. False North. Oh, I suppose I better tell you the five words. I have to read them because I've forgotten. Compass, apple, jasmine, onions, oblique. False North. The ghosts of horses stood asleep in the long grass. Sunlight, moonlight filled them with a glimmer that was a moment's oblique flash. Corner-eyed vision of the passing drunks, farmers, the old hags troubling the grassy laneways. This is how they were when he found them, when the breath came into him again. Jasmine seemed to fill his mind not as a scent, but as a heady idea. Rampions grew about the bases of the trees. Horses stamped and snorted, stomach high in thistles. He knew then, in his jasmine heady mind, that he was in the corner of something. An overgrown corner on the edges of heaven, or on the edges of hell. But wherever it was that he was, it was a place of no leaving. Horses, heavy with torpidity, showed him that. Apples, long fallen, long rotten, victims of an extinct gravity, beckoned from the shadows of the horses. An apple as a compass, its warm, its worm pointing false north, he paced in pointless loops of nowhere. This corner of wherever it was endless. It was like an onion, which is an onion inside an onion inside an onion. Purgatory was utter hell.
When me and Jennifer were judging the competition, it was all done totally anonymously, so we didn't know whose poems we were reading, but I should have known that was
I know.
By you. So, we now come to the two specially commended poets, and firstly we'll have from London Town, Adania Igwe, please.
So this is the first time that I'm reading, apart from just a couple of minutes ago, I'm reading a poem that I've written, so thank you. And this poem is called Home Cooking, and the words were syncopate, rooted, salt, weight, and level. And it's supposed to be about the excuses you give yourself when you notice you're changing. I can't find my voice. I know it's out there. I can hear its embittered hiss, trapped amongst black bodies and bustling airport lines, levels coated with sweat. Can almost feel the Atlantic salt on my tongue, though I can't taste it yet. I can't find my voice, but I still speak a lot. Mostly starched hellos, my savory rhythms having been replaced by soft syncopated beats, the tones of the white men, between which I fit apologies for my defection. Too much rough Western food. See, in November, I will bloom with the fat of yams, plantains, batteries, cassava leaves, mangoes, thick-fruited. The food of my mother's, my old voice is deep-rooted. While drums dance my words down their long way to home.
Thank you so much for coming all the way to share that with us. It's great. Deeply appreciated. And another person. And our other commended effort came from perhaps just a little closer to home, at West Cork, in the form of Afric McGlinchey.
My poems were my words were snake, semi-quaver, shy, quiet, and corny. And there's an epigraph by Margaret Atwood. It was always the other way around. It's called Sonnet in B Major. Do magic like feral creatures, turning into a language. Cold air awakening. Coins are still legitimate, but not quiet anymore. A wet, black, semi-quaver opening up, like the frantic eye of an arbitrary Icarus. Oh, these bells. If we must die ingloriously, let's first rise up like snakes from the monumental pit. We don't get back for a second year. But I digress. Sway, everybody. Even the horse that shies, the child on paper, green easy until flummoxed. Speed's got a nerve, a no-time strident bunch of followers. All these criminal acts move the iceberg or lose the Titanic.
Thank you.